numbers have improved significantly in recent years. Today, we have 5 5-star hotels in operation or nearing completion, several new 4-star hotels, and many boutique and traditional hotels. By 2026, with the addition of 4 more hotels, Isfahan's accommodation capacity will improve even further.
Mr. Labofon emphasized that the hospitality industry offers one of the most profitable opportunities for foreign investors in Isfahan.
Many 1-3-star hotels exist, but many are aging and in need of renovation. Providing financial support to owners for refurbishment may be more effective than building new hotels. Around 30-40% of Isfahan's hotels require modernization, and renewing them would greatly strengthen the city's hospitality sector.
Consider this. Isfahan has only 2 5-star hotels. For a destination often compared to Rome or Istanbul, that is a major gap, and for investors, a major opportunity. Authorities here know it. To encourage development, Isfahan's municipality covers 99% of hotel construction permit fees, leaving investors to pay just 1%. Tax breaks, prime land, and fast-track approvals are on the table. In a region where tourism demand is outpacing supply, Isfahan is rolling out the welcome mat for those ready to build.
We have prepared about 110 investment packages. These are fully documented in a 3-language investment book, Persian, English, and Arabic. In addition, we operate a website where individuals and local authorities, municipalities, governorates can upload their own tourism investment opportunities. For example, if someone owns a piece of land and believes it has potential for tourism development, they can list it on this platform. Our aim is to create what we call investment wallets or ready-made packages, projects that already have the necessary permits and clearances, so that an investor can, quite literally, start work the very next day.
For centuries, the Zayanda River has been the lifeline of Isfahan, flowing beneath these arches and bringing life to the city. Today, the water may not always run, but the bridges remain as places where people still talk, gather, and share their stories. The Khaju Bridge, with its magnificent and functional design, continues to echo with music, poetry, and laughter, proving that even without the river's flow, the spirit of Isfahan's community endures.
One of our main priorities now is developing designated tourism areas. Thanks to recent reforms in the statutes of the national water organizations, we can now make better use of rivers, lakes, and reservoirs for tourism. The Zayanda Root River's banks, as well as our many dams, can serve as attractive sites. We are promoting different forms of nature tourism, ecotourism, mountain tourism, and desert tourism. Isfahan's deserts, Khur and Biabanak, Maranjab, Aran and Bidgul, Varzaneh, and even parts of Nain, are among the most pristine in Iran. They are ideal for stargazing in dark sky zones, where within 30-50 kilometers there is no artificial light, a feature highly valued worldwide for astronomy tourism. Beyond nature, Isfahan is world famous for its historic monuments, especially those from the Seljuk, Ilkhanid, and Safavid eras. Their unique architecture and ornamentation are treasures of Iranian art that attract countless visitors. Many of these sites, including our numerous caravanserais, offer investment opportunities for restoration and adaptive reuse. All of these have been compiled into our investment guide.
This ability to transform challenges into attractions is part of Isfahan's story. The dry riverbed has sparked creative ideas. festivals, cultural nights, and light shows that turn absence into presence. And beyond the city center, ecotourism is taking shape. Salt caves in Natanz, the slopes of Sofin Mountain, and gardens that bloom in the desert are opening new chapters in Isfahan's tourism playbook.
I often say that although Isfahan has not been Iran's capital for more than 400 years, the city still behaves as if it were. In development projects, whether social, cultural, economic, or infrastructural, Isfahan carries itself with the dignity of a capital city. Each of our cities is like an open-air museum. From Kashan to Niyasar, from Qamsar to Abiyanir, and further into the deserts and mountains, every part of this province has something unique to offer. Our deserts, like Khur and Biabanak, are breathtaking, while mountainous regions, like Semirom and Feridun Shahr, are equally beautiful. In northern areas, you can find historical cities whose architecture reflects centuries of different styles, like a living atlas of Iranian design. Yet, unfortunately, most tourists, even domestic ones, only visit the well-known landmarks such as Siyosepol, Khaju Bridge, or Naqsh-e-Jahan Square. They remain unaware of the hidden treasures scattered across the province.
Health tourism is another frontier. With modern hospitals, internationally trained doctors, and costs a fraction of Europe, Isfahan is attracting patients from Iraq, Afghanistan, the Persian Gulf countries, and beyond. To learn more about Isfahan Healthcare City, we met with its operations manager, Mr. Reza Heybati.
Isfahan has deep roots in medicine and healing, stretching back centuries. Even Avicenna had a school here, and institutions such as the Nizamiya attracted students and patients from across the world. This legacy forms both a scientific and cultural foundation for health tourism today. Building on this tradition, modern Isfahan is home to highly skilled physicians and advanced medical facilities. From traditional medicine to cutting-edge treatments, the city offers a wide spectrum of healthcare. If we can better introduce these strengths to the world, Isfahan can become a leading international destination for health tourism.
Treatment packages now combine surgery with cultural chores, recovery with discovery. For investors in clinics, wellness resorts, or medical hospitality, the potential is immense.
Based on our studies and with strong support from national authorities, we have planned to establish a special health zone in Isfahan. Healthcare City is its first phase. The legal framework for such zones provides exceptional advantages, reduced bureaucracy, simplified processes for investors, and easier import of medical equipment. This means that projects can move forward faster and with fewer administrative obstacles. In Healthcare City itself, Phase 1, Phase 2, and its surrounding area, we are already developing these opportunities. It's becoming both an economic driver and a magnet for investment. The results will not only create economic value, but also raise the level of individual and public health. Improved health is the foundation of development. It enables a society to advance socially and economically.
Mr. Heybati explained why patients from across the region and beyond choose this modern medical hub.
Many countries in our region impose restrictions on certain treatments. For example, gender selection may be prohibited. Fertility and infertility treatments may be underdeveloped, or cosmetic surgeries may not be widely available. In Iran, by contrast, our doctors perform these procedures routinely and at a high standard. This makes Isfahan particularly attractive for patients from abroad. At the same time, it creates income for the city and helps elevate our physicians from local to international standing.
Religious tourism also remains underdeveloped. The province counts more than 700 shrines, 100 historic mosques, and churches that date back centuries. In a world where pilgrim travel is a multi-billion dollar industry, Isfahan could be a hub if the right accommodations and services are built.
One of the most important investment areas in Isfahan is our historic buildings. The province is extremely rich in monuments and old structures, both privately and publicly owned. We're trying to support and incentivize their restoration and reuse. Together with municipalities and city councils, we have worked to simplify procedures, for example, permits for establishing tourism facilities or exemptions and reductions in land use conversion fees. Under the 7th National Development Plan, many of these fees have been reduced to zero, which is a powerful incentive. That plan also provides other supports for tourism, such as allowing duty-free import of tourism vehicles.
But perhaps the greatest investment opportunity lies in preservation. Many of the city's monuments, some truly one of a kind, are in urgent need of restoration. Across the world, from Florence to Kyoto, public-private partnerships have turned heritage preservation into both cultural duty and profitable venture. Isfahan is no different. With smart investment, saving history can become a sustainable business. When discussing Isfahan's future, Mr. Karamzadeh stressed that the province's greatest opportunities no longer lie in heavy industry, but in areas that both honor heritage and safeguard the environment.
Another area of development is roadside service complexes. Isfahan is one of Iran's main transport crossroads, so facilities along highways are in high demand. Beyond the 110 investment packages I mentioned, we have identified another 60 to 70 opportunities, specifically in this sector. We firmly believe that the province no longer needs to expand heavy industry. Isfahan is already industrialized enough, and further growth in this direction would harm the environment and water resources. Instead, we must pivot toward tourism and clean industries, sectors that protect the environment, conserve natural resources, and require far less water. Tourism in particular is not water intensive, and it can gradually replace some of the province's water-hungry industries. Our hope is to make tourism the leading sector in Isfahan's economy.
Here along Chahar Bagh, where plane trees cast their shadows and centuries-old buildings line the way, Isfahan's story unfolds with every step. Wherever your journey begins, let it bring you here to walk these boulevards, share in its flavors, meet its people, and see for yourself why Isfahan is called half of the world. For the traveler, Isfahan is a place to marvel. For the investor, it is a place to act. Few cities combine heritage this rich with a market this open. With millions already coming each year and global recognition growing, the moment to shape Isfahan's tourism future is now. Isfahan, half the world and a whole opportunity.
Despite negative portrayals in some foreign media, Iran is in fact one of the fastest countries for foreign investment. The Islamic Republic offers strong guarantees that are hard to find elsewhere. In addition, Iran is rich in human capital, highly educated professionals, united by a shared culture and strong traditions, working together. Perhaps the strongest assurance is that the country's highest leadership explicitly prioritizes investment and production. When the leader of the revolution designates investment and production as the national theme of the year, it becomes a guiding policy for all institutions. This level of political commitment offers unparalleled confidence to investors.
Thank you for joining us on this journey. Until next time, take care.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. We are glad you could join us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. We'll start off this hour's programs with our varied radio productions feature. After that, we have A to Z of Life. The program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of ayahs of the Holy Quran, as well as inspirational poetry and stories. And our final program this hour is again our radio productions feature. Stay with us for the next hour.
Welcome to Women of Resistance. Bisan is only 15, but having lived her whole young life in the shadows of the war, and more recently a genocide, the budding poet and aspiring journalist says she feels much, much older than her age. Here is her story.
Atop the rubble and alongside the spirits of the martyrs, a powerful young voice cries out. Meet Palestine's next generation, young in years but with eyes that have seen more than most. A teenagers with thoughts that jump in the ether, moving between the innocence of kindergarten and the horrors of growing up under occupation. October the 7th, the new defining point in the history of Palestine and Gazans, Bisan's young mind operating between recognition of the new horrors and a sense that this was almost an inevitable consequence of simply being born where she was. Bisan has acknowledged something those outside have slowly started to realize. Israel seeks not only the annihilation of Palestinian bodies, it wants to destroy their history, culture, any signs that they were on the land and off the land. For many of the youth like Bisan, they knew enough to know what they were experiencing was not normal. What this level of trauma does to a young mind will only be apparent in the months and years to come. Gaza's children still dream, still hope. Broken dreams give way to poetic expressions. Bisan is using the time she's been forced away from formal education to share her story. The reserve of strength that Bisan and her loved ones had to dig into to merely survive was often depleted. The sights and sounds being experienced by one so young sometimes took Bisan to a dark place mentally. The so-called ceasefires and false dawns for Palestinians have left a mark. The prospect of respite being sometimes overwhelmed by the scale of what has been lost. Yet that sense of defiance, that steadfastness that is imbued in the very DNA of Palestine speaks life into the darkness. Bisan's work online is a godsend, allowing her to share her story with the world. Bisan contemplates a future shaped by the realities of an Israeli genocide and a new Nakba. There's also a message of defiance and hope, directed at the White House and its acolytes. Why does Bissan try to reach the world with her prose and stories? Why does this teenager, who's known nothing but the sting of occupation her entire life, continue to speak to us from Gaza? We don't have to guess.
Now joining me in the studio today to discuss Bissan's story is Sukaina Rajwani, whose 20-year-old daughter is among the Filton 18 being held without bail in the British jail for opposing the genocide in Palestine. Welcome, Sukaina. Sukaina, we heard the story of Bissan, just 15 years old, you know, the harrowing stories of what she's had to go through. She's grown up, you know, ahead of her time. She's 15, but she feels much, much older, you know, according to herself. Does that remind you of your daughter, Fatima Zainab?
So first of all, thank you, Sukaina, for inviting me on the show today. I really appreciate the platform and for being able to speak with you today. So for the last 18 months, Gaza has been under siege. We have seen terrible atrocities being committed, and we cannot even imagine, and we cannot even begin to understand the plight of Bissan and children like her who are living in that environment at this point in time. Bissan has lived all her life under occupation, which we can only describe as an open-air prison. And when we speak about Fatima Zainab and Bissan, their situations are incomparable. We cannot, like I said, even begin to imagine what Bissan has gone through. But one thing I'd like to, you know, sort of draw out in terms of similarities, they're both young women. They both have dreams, hopes, and aspirations of what they want to do. We just heard right now that Bissan wants to be a journalist, you know, and Fatima Zainab is a third-year media student. She would have been graduating this summer had she not been in prison. She also aspires to, you know, to create films, to write her own, you know, screenplays and direct her own documentaries one day. So, you know, that's where I can draw the parallels and the similarities between Fatima Zainab and Bissan.
Now, just to make it clear, obviously, Sukaina, Fatima Zainab, you know, with a group of other young people had gone to Elbit system, which produces drones, you know, for the Israelis to conduct their genocide, and, you know, with Palestine Action, and they were held. Tell me a little bit about, you know, in brief, you know, what are the charges and how they're being treated?
So in terms of Fatima Zainab's arrest, Fatima Zainab was initially arrested along with five other activists, allegedly accused of causing damage to weapons for trying to stop the supply of weapons to Israel. She was arrested under counter-terror powers on site at Elbit in Bristol. Fatima Zainab, along with those arrested with her, they were held incommunicado in solitary confinement for up to 6 days, and within this time period, there were four other arrests under the counter-terror laws, and then in November 2024, we saw further arrests, and now there's 18 of them held under counter-terror powers by the state, who are trying to, you know, do what they can, trying to intimidate the public by the use of such counter-terror powers, and there have been drone raids, 30 officers at a time, smashing doors and windows, entering properties of these family members, handcuffing siblings, just to scare and intimidate the general public, whoever is pro-Palestine, whoever is trying to speak out, trying to sort of take any sort of action. It is quite concerning. Four UN experts have also raised their concerns to our government, speaking about the enforced disappearance of the Filton group, especially whilst they were in solitary confinement. And they've also raised concerns about the massive, the definition of terrorism under international law. It is only used in most cases for murder charges or, you know, similar charges.
Absolutely, and there is no case of terrorism, as most
of
people,
course.
And even other charges are alleged at this stage,
yes.
But they are being, you know, held without trial for more than a year, just to sort of, you know, punish them. Thank you, Sukaina, for being with me today, and thank you. We leave you with the sounds of Palestine by the artist Saif. Goodbye.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, not even recognized. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome day to Z here on Iron Bingish Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And this idea of not even recognized. So what I'm talking about is this idea that even though a person might be have a very important rank or post, a job, there are times where not everyone knows who that person is, so they don't sort of physically recognize them. And that person also doesn't behave in such a way as to draw attention to themselves. And obviously this is, so what does this show us? So this shows us that, so a person who has a high rank but doesn't make a sort of big show of it, doesn't say, oh, I'm such and such, to sort of get, let's say, applause or praise or get special treatment from others, is obviously a very humble person. And this is the quality that we really need to, in a sense, emphasize and train in ourselves. And look, there are different, obviously different sorts of people who that we can look at to sort of see, well, okay, so what does that mean on the ground? Practically, how are these people behaving? Who are they? So if we look at any of our martyrs from active service, such as in martyrs from the Holy Defense, we find very beautiful stories. For example, one of the very famous martyrs from the Holy Defense, Dr. Mustafa Chamran. So some people, even when he was, I think this is when he was defense minister, and he was just having lunch with his colleagues, obviously people would maybe not seen him, not sighted him, sort of like face to face, didn't know what he looked like. So there was a time when he was sat down having lunch with the other colleagues, and then one of the colleagues, who obviously had never met him before, said, well, when is the defense minister coming to join us? And obviously he was there, but he didn't draw attention to himself. Welcome back to Age Said here on Iron Bingish Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously I'm talking about the trait of humility, that we do not draw attention to ourselves, even if we have a really important position or if we're a very rich person, whatever it is that we think is so special. But we don't try to distinguish ourselves. We don't try to make ourselves more important or better than others. And, you know, this is something that we see also in martyrs of service. For example, the former president of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Shahid Raisi, he would, for example, because he was alongside his duties also serving as the imam of a mosque, and he would then after sort of prayer sometimes be seen just sat in the corner sort of talking with people about their issues. And yeah, and not everyone knew who this person was. It was just sat there on the floor in the corner of the mosque talking, because not everyone actually sort of recognized him. And, you know, this is a trait, obviously, that we need to sort of encourage in ourselves. And obviously, this is where it comes down to how do we behave? So if we have a post, whatever it is, many of us actually have roles in life where we think, maybe it's above someone else. So we then need to think, well, how do we behave on a day-to-day basis? Even when we meet people, and sadly, and this is a very typical behavior when we meet people, people sometimes ask us, oh, well, what do you do? What's your job? And then obviously we have to answer. So that's one thing. And maybe the job is actually quite high rank. But then what if we then ourselves, even without being asked, feel that we have to volunteer, that we have an important job? For example, assume you're maybe you're a top, or maybe even a school principal, and you have to sort of just volunteer that, oh, I'm a school principal. Well, yeah, is that really necessary? So I think this also calls for self-reflection, whether we ourselves try to draw attention to ourselves, and what can we do to actually, you know, stop ourselves doing that. So inshallah, this is a reminder for all of us, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on Iron Bingush Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In a hot night in the summer in the late 1930s, a teenage boy who had recently lost his father in a street fight saw a superhuman character in his dream who had replaced his father. Strong, smart, fast, and protector of security, a superhero that the crisis-stricken American society anxiously waited for so he'd rescue them from the economic problems and injustice of the 1930s.
Fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Not many people thought that the dream of a teenager would be so influential and leave such a huge impact on the future of a country. The Americans of the 1930s were challenged with social and economic problems, injustice, and crime. They needed a source of power who could put an end to their crises. A superhuman solution should have been found for the problems apparently no human being could solve. That was how Superman, the first superhero of comic stories, became the solution to the crisis. It was a DC company that released the red and blue clad man stories for the first time and started the narratives of a superhero. Superman fought against injustice in American society, corrupt officials and gangsters, and supported the oppressed and miserable people. Every day, American weapons would stoke tensions in the war in Europe, and the U.S. in return would reap a huge economic benefit from selling weapons to the country involved in the war. Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor in the United States served as an excuse to push the public to support Washington's engagement in the war. At that time, Captain America was quite helpful in setting the stage for the U.S. to get involved in the war. All American superheroes fought alongside the U.S. Army against the villain forces who had threatened America. In a period of 20 years after propagating American values, about 78 million children were born during the baby boom. That generation always felt the shadow of a nuclear war. The baby boom generation had become teens who started their activities to take part in society and express their demands. They needed new heroes to shout their demands out loud. As a generation grew up, the crime rates among the youth during the 60s rose. They lived during an economic boost and would never understand their father's concerns. It was like that generation and their parents were born in two different countries and were in two different worlds. They voted for Kennedy as a young and handsome president. They loved the Beatles and gradually started hippie bands.
That's why these children are practicing to...
Hulk, a character who turns into a green monster due to atomic radiation as he was repelled by society. He turned into a popular hero for the baby boom generation who felt alienated from their own identities. Marvel's other nuclear hero and the most popular one during the period was Spider-Man. Peter Parker, an introvert, thin teenage boy who was from a baby boom generation, turned into a hero with amazing powers after he was bitten by a nuclear radiation-infected spider. Marvel introduced other heroes like Ant-Man, Thor, Iron Man, and X-Men with the same principles. Marvel's new heroes were nervous, complicated characters with a list of deficiencies whose human aspects were magnified and were distinguished from the flawless characters before. The baby boom generation changed society. Following social injustices, the Vietnam War, racism, and the assassination of their popular president, Kennedy, the generation triggered a social revolution and questioned American values and causes. During those years, the Cold War reached its pinnacle. The Soviet influence in Vietnam increased, and the U.S. did not want to lag behind the rivalry. People in the U.S. took to the streets to protest the Vietnam War. But the most important superhero in the hero-making industry in the U.S., concurrent with the Vietnam War, was Iron Man, whose real name was Tony Stark. The Vietnam War, with its huge casualties and costs, was one of the shameful decisions in the eyes of Americans, and the opposition had snowballed. Society needed to be convinced. Someone had to sympathize with the people who had lost their sons and daughters. It was Iron Man who was tasked to do so. In the 1960s, he initially supported the U.S. Army's involvement in the Vietnam War, arguing that the U.S. will make a lot of money selling weapons.
For your consideration,
but gradually, he faced many changes. He was increasingly disillusioned with U.S. foreign policy. In the mid-1970s, he expressed remorse for the deaths of people who were killed by the weapons that he made and said he will take revenge for the people who lost their lives, especially for ignorant people like himself.
I saw young Americans killed by the very weapons I created to defend them and protect them, and I saw that I had become part of a system that is comfortable with zero accountability.
Stark.
Hey, Ben.
What happened over there?
I had my eyes open. I came to realize that I have more to offer this world than just making things that blow up. And that is why, effective immediately, I am shutting down the weapons manufacturer division Stark International until such a time as I can decide what the future of this company will be, what direction it should take, one that I'm comfortable with and is consistent with the highest.
The change in his character was a symbol of change in American society that had become aware of its own identity. The enemies of the superheroes were no longer the Germans, Japanese, communists, or any other foreign entity.
The main enemy was inside the United States. During this period, the protest by people of color against racial discrimination spread. Leaders like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. turned into the symbols of resistance against the U.S. structure. The protests were at their highest after the assassination of Malcolm X in 1965. The incidents made Marvel create its first black character named the Black Panther. The scandal caused by President Richard Nixon, his resignation, and high inflation and unemployment rates made things worse.
In Washington, a break-in at the Watergate Hotel was found to involve five men in the pay of the committee to re-elect President Nixon. The burglar's target was the office of the chairman of the Democratic Party. The story was to make the names of two young local reporters from the Washington Post.
The catastrophe following Nixon's corruption case and the Watergate scandal gripped American rulers by the collar. They had realized that public opinion needed to calm down. And just like in the past, the superheroes were the best options. In one of the comic stories in this period, Captain America, with his fake copy, namely the Captain America in the 1950s, who fought for the U.S. Army, tells himself, "I've never fought with my own demonic part. A man with patriotic dreams, I'm responsible for the evil he did." Captain America was fighting with a sinister empire that wanted to take control of the U.S. In the end, he captured head of the White House, and by removing his mask, he realized the U.S. president was the head of the evil group. The story is about disgraced Nixon administration. This time, unlike the previous times, the captain didn't become happy after achieving victory, and he abandons the fight. He loses faith in Americans and chooses to become a stateless man. He says, "I've done things that I don't take pride in anymore, but I always tried to serve my country well. Now I can see that the government is serving itself." The bitter taste of those days made Spider-Man stories bitter. Something rare happened in Spider-Man. Mary Jane, Spider-Man's fiancé, was killed in a fight. Spider-Man blamed himself for Mary Jane's death and never stopped reprimanding himself following the incident. It was similar to how Americans felt about their government. Marvel adopted this line and made social criticism in its stories. DC also tried to become aligned with social developments to some extent. So, it introduced a real hero against the power structure in America in its stories. He was the greatest and the eternal boxer, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali won the Olympic gold medal at the age of 20. He was always against the government because of the oppression against the black community. And because of his stance, he didn't join the army so he wouldn't be forced to fight for the U.S. Army in Vietnam. Muhammad Ali was a symbol of resistance against U.S. dominance, and he had become an international figure. And DC use the popular hero. In one of the stories, Superman, who's a symbol of America, was defeated by Muhammad Ali in a boxing bout. Later, they made up a team to save the planet from aliens. In the end, Muhammad Ali wins in a boxing competition against the aliens, and Earth was saved. The pictorial story became the best-selling comic in the late 1970s. After Ronald Reagan took office in the 1980s, he made the government smaller but expanded the army. The conflict with the Soviets escalated, and American citizens' nationalistic support boosted thanks to professional media techniques. Reagan, who was formerly a movie star, knew very well how to act like a hero. Amid the Soviet threats and the Cold War, many people were scared of widespread crime. The Reagan administration was an avid proponent of individualism and consumerism, while the population was more scared of the violence. In Night of Darkness, there's a character of the president in the city of Gotham. It shows a cartoon of Reagan and his nationalistic speech.
Brave American forces are now engaged in direct combat with Soviet troops in Corto Maltese. Now those Soviets would like to see us turn our tails and run, but we've got to protect our interest, stand up for freedom. So don't you fret. We've got God on our side. Or the next best thing, anyway.
While his city was about to collapse because of injustice, in the real world, on December 22, 1984, a citizen from New York named Bernard Goetz shot thieves with 4 bullets to defend himself. People sympathized with him, and the court that had already indicted Goetz acquitted him. He became the symbol of a person who has provided security and safety for himself in a chaotic world. He saved himself through his acts of violence. The situation provided comic books with sufficient ammo, and new characters stepped in. In response to the world of violence, 3 characters, namely Punisher, Daredevil, and Logan, torture their enemies through the most violent methods and would kill them after they lost a lot of blood.
Allah, you're the light that shines above. You're the reason I never give up. You're the one I try for. Live my life for. Give up all I have. You're the melody, you're the key, all the inspiration I need. And when times get tough, I know you'll stand by me. You are the love I need, the one who has guided me. And you know my destiny, for you are the light. And you are my life.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners from around the world. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. Very nice to have you with us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. By the way, you're listening to Iran Radio. In Islam, the ink of the scholar is more holy than the blood of the martyr. There are an estimated 1.8 billion Muslims in the world, which is about 1.5% of the world's population. Due to the birth and conversion rates, Islam is considered to be the fastest growing religion in the world today. And on the continuation of Iran Radio, we start off this hour's programs with the Spring of Truth. The program presents a selection of statements and speeches by the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini. May Allah bless his soul. That will be followed by Round the World with reporters. Listen to